Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Hi, this is Lauren Petrovic, founder of Laurenti New York. Welcome to the Responsible Luxury Podcast. In this episode of Responsible Luxury, we dive deep into the transformative landscape of retail and how emerging technology is shaping the future for brands and consumers alike. We will unravel the benefits behind embracing technology to not only enhance consumer experiences, but also pave the way for a more sustainable and circular economy. This week on the podcast, I sit down with Vivian Zhang, founder and CEO, to discuss her brainchild, Solaire.
We hope that the industry will come together as a whole to actually see secondary market not as a lost revenue piece for the brands, but also as an extension of their business. And with that, both parties, both brands and consumers can benefit from making the industry more circular, more sustainable as a whole, and also, you know, make the world a more sustainable place.
In November of last year, Vivian and I were connected through a mutual friend, and ever since, Solaire has been an instrumental partner for Laurenti New York by helping us deliver blockchain certificates for our jewelry collections. Solaire is at the forefront, laying the foundation for the future of retail. Vivian is a trailblazer in the realm of technology, and I am so excited for you guys to hear more about her work as we explore the intersection of responsible luxury with emerging technology. Here's Vivian Zhang on the Responsible Luxury Podcast. Vivian, hello, how are you?
Good morning to you too, Lauren. How are you?
Good. I am so excited to have you on today on the show. I'm really looking forward to having the audience learn more about you, talk about Solaire, talk about all things tech and the exciting projects you're working on. So to get us started, can you tell us a little bit more about your personal journey into the industry and where you come from a career sense and also from a personal lens as well?
Sure, happy to. Thank you for having me here today. So prior to starting Solaire, I spent about over 10 years in the luxury sector, primarily in luxury jewelry. Previously, I worked at Tiffany, Harry Winston, and a smaller jewelry brand that's very well known in the Middle East. So my journey into tech really started from my experience working in luxury jewelry, experiencing some of the pain points firsthand, both as a consumer and as a brand. One of them, obviously, is from transparency in sourcing, in provenance. Second of all is storytelling when it comes to selling jewelry, because it's a sentimental piece. And sometimes the meaning behind the design and the stone powers a lot of other things. And lastly, was really my passion for tech. I, you know, not to date myself, but I lived through the rise of Web 2. When I was starting out my career, it was the beginning of Facebook and of social media. Nobody really knew what to do with, you know, social media and how would that affect retail. And that was the beginning of Web 2. And now everything we do revolves around, you know, content creation, creator economy, social selling, social commerce. So now I'm witnessing a similar wave coming from Web 3, which is slightly different than Web 2 because it's more driven by the technology called blockchain. But I don't want to miss out again. which is why about over a year ago, I quit my job to devote myself into blockchain and Web3 and trying to use the technology to make something good for the industry and to really move the industry forward. From there, Solera was born.
So when you were working at these other companies in the fashion and jewelry industry, did you have the initial ideas and inspiration for Solera? Were you thinking about this a long time before you quit your corporate job?
Yes, I've had that idea actually about 3 years before I quit my job. But back then, I didn't think the technology or the use case around it was mature enough. So I didn't want to quit my job too soon. I wanted to wait until the ecosystem or at least the larger industry is more well-versed in the impact that it could potentially make for the industry. So I guess a few things sort of happened to sort of prompt me to quit my job. Number one is the requirement in EU for digital product passport that is becoming mandatory starting 2026. So that's, you know, on a regulatory perspective, it's really mandating the industry to adapt to a certain standard. So that's one thing that's pushing the industry forward. And number two is the consumer's awareness when it comes to understanding more about what they're purchasing, responsible mining, responsible purchasing. And thirdly was sort of the rise of sustainability, both on the brand side and on consumer side. Consumers wanted to buy things that are more sustainable, that are more responsibly, you know, produced and manufactured. And brands also wanted to be more sustainable, hopefully this time not greenwashing, but actually making an impact that's beyond just marketing effort. So a few things actually, I guess, aligned for me to actually think that this is now the time to quit my job and do this. Also, my understanding of blockchain technology also matured over time, right? For example, NFT, a lot of people think that NFT is a product, it's digital art, but it's really not. NFT is a technology. NFT is non-fungible token. It's a form of technology that creates one-of-a-kind digital record that cannot be replicated. And that piece of technology can be used for many, many different things, particularly when it comes to retail, when it comes to protecting authenticity, product integrity, providing transparency. So I can go on and on. So it was really sort of different factors that come in together that made me feel like about a year ago is the time.
A lot of exciting things on the table. Can you give a clear mission for Solera and your vision for Web3 in the future and the impact that Solera is going to have?
Very good question. So when I built out Solera, I wanted to be the infrastructure, the retail infrastructure built on blockchain to really move the industry forward, touching various, you know, touch points on the consumer side, providing trust, providing transparency, providing protection when it comes to investing in a purchase, whether it's big or small. And on the brand side, it's about giving them access and visibility into two things. Number one is consumer behavior. What are they doing? How are they interacting and engaging with your product and your content? Number two is giving them the ability to trace a product, not just backwards into supply chain, but also forward once it's sold from you. That's a personal pet peeve of mine. I was a former merchant at Tiffany and other brands for a long time. And also it always puzzles me that something that we sold a couple years later, it ended up in an auction house, it ended up in a secondary market, it ended up with someone else that we did not sell to. You always wonder where that journey, after it's sold from you, when that journey started, where did it go? And from a business perspective, being able to read and know the secondary market demand of your product is like gold to a business owner. Like you will, number one, know how much customers are willing to pay for it. Pricing is always the number one headache for a lot of brands. You are either doing, you know, cost plus pricing or you are doing competitive pricing. But knowing how much your product is perceived by your consumers, knowing what consumers are willing to pay for it is really, really important. Number two is also from a more sustainability perspective, to know, you know, you can have better demand planning, knowing that are people willing to buy it because they couldn't get it in the primary market, or have I produced a surplus of things that is now decreasing in value after it's manufactured? So am I overproducing things? So a lot of these information can be attracted from the secondary consumer behavior in the secondary market. So all of that data will be super powerful. And that is my passion to be able to deliver that to the brand.
Solaire is filling such a huge gap in the industry, and it's not only exciting, yes, in a data-driven way, but also the creative applications as well from the standpoint of a brand and retailer of telling your product's journey for your customer, giving them insights into how the piece was created and made. You were recently in NFT Paris. How was the overall sentiment of the conference, and what were your takeaways?
Yeah, I would say that Europe has a very different vibe than US.
Right.
Currently, when it comes to the adoption of blockchain. At the conference, you see luxury brands walking around the floor. Pretty much every single luxury group and luxury brand out there in Europe have a representative or a group of representatives walking around the floor, engaging with different companies. And also they are on the stage openly sharing about their Web3 or NFT strategy. It's quite different in the US, mostly because of, there was somewhat of a negative sentiment around blockchain because it's usually perceived as crypto, but crypto was not blockchain per se. Right. And then brands are a little scared. So a lot of the companies in the US are actually getting rid of their Web3 division. Versus in Europe, it's something that everybody is embracing. You even have government officials walking around the floor, engaging with different startups. So you see a lot more innovation, both on the consumer side, on the fashion side, on the technology side, happening in Europe. So yeah, so for that reason, I think it was exciting for us to know that, there is still hope. And I think it's just a matter of time for the US market to come back around and really see the value of that. And, most well-known luxury and consumer brands are based out of Europe anyway. So that will be a good place for us to start to sort of lead by example to see how these brands are embracing and engaging with new technology and what value it can bring to the consumers and to the brands. And hopefully that sentiment will carry over to the US soon. So then more and more brands and consumers will be able to enjoy the benefits of this new piece of technology.
I think that, to your point, regulation certainly needs to catch up. You mentioned digital product passport, which is a term I'm not sure a lot of US-based brands are aware of. Can you tell us a little bit about what digital product DPP is and the purpose of it in the EU?
Yeah, sure. So it really came from EU's commitment to make the consumer industry or the retail industry more sustainable, which means that holding brands responsible from sourcing, from material management and different material composition. So think of that like when you buy anything today, it usually comes with a tag. And on that tag, there is some information about your product. It's usually a lot of information in a lot of different languages and onto a small piece of paper. So EU's goal is to digitize that. So then with unlimited space, brands will be able to provide full transparency into the provenance of the product and also be able to provide more details about exactly where everything came from. What is this piece of product made of? What is the impact of those product to the environment? So this was the initial goal, is to have a digital ID to any physical product. But they're calling it passport, which is really interesting because when you think of a passport as, for any real human being, it travels with you when you travel. So the intention was also for this piece of digital ID to travel with the product. So when it came from sourcing from different materials coming together into the manufacturer and being made into a piece of product, that is one milestone, but that product typically has many, many more milestones down the line, going from the manufacturer to maybe the first point of sales. Maybe it gets distributed into wholesalers, and then it was sold to the first customer. And after that, it might go to many exchange of hands until it end up in the landfill, or maybe it's a piece of jewelry that just gets passed on forever. But being able to retain the history of the product all the way from the beginning is the intention of this. And because you cannot carry a piece of paper with it and no one is manually logging in every milestone of the product, it just makes sense to digitize this piece of information. And because of, you know, it doesn't have to be on blockchain, but a lot of companies with the long-term vision to see it, understand that in order for the information to be trustworthy, to be transparent, to be secure, there is actually no better way than recording that information on blockchain. That way it's accessible by everyone and it can be trusted by all parties. And then because there is not a single party who is responsible for updating or maintaining this piece of information in their private cloud, the information can live on.
So let's take that a step further. Thinking into the future, the products, especially in Europe, since we're getting ahead of this, are going to be having these product passports. For products being created today, we could take fashion, jewelry. I like that example, actually, that you gave at the auction house. You know, you have a piece of artwork that's being auctioned off at, let's say, Sotheby's or Christie's. And that piece now comes when the buyer now can also receives that digital certificate, hopefully by Solaire, is incredibly exciting. You know, what do you see that looking like in the future? And what are the dangers for brands and retailers who aren't investing time to learn about this? What's going to happen to the value of their products on the market?
A very good question. Number one is, if you're not attaching a digital product passport to your product, you are basically cutting yourself off from the secondary economy. Once a product is sold, you completely lose contact with your product. You have no idea where it went. The product could be, you know, worth a lot of money in the secondary market, and you will have no access, no data, and not being able to capture that piece of the economy. Number two is you're basically leaving money on the table because you are leaving the right to authenticate your product to, you know, a random third-party marketplace that are making money from authenticating your product. And they obviously cannot do a better job than yourself. And then which also you're allowing room for counterfeits to come and take your market share in the secondary market. Not being able to authenticate your product from the source and just let product go unattached into the secondary market, then it's, you know, it will be joined by a group of other counterfeits that are also unattached with any physical or digital ID, then, you know, you are diluting your own market share. So it's just not a smart way to run your business. And plus, on a regulatory level, I think EU always being the first, but it will just be a matter of time for the rest of the world to catch on. And at that time, for you to come and try to backdate anything that you were losing market share or money on, that's just not very smart when it comes to a business decision.
Businesses are missing the bigger picture, the long-term vision. They're leaving their business in the past, pretty much, if they're not adopting.
One other thing I want to add is that it's not, in terms of the practice of adding digital product passport, it's not a huge step up than what they're possibly doing already today. Like, a lot of inventory is now managed by RFID. So if you're putting a physical tag in your physical product to do inventory purpose, to be able to track theft,
right?
It is something that it's just, you know, it's on a technology level, it's a small upgrade that will unlock many opportunities and potentials for your business that they were not doing.
Right. Could you share some of the challenges that you see some brands and retailers facing today, just in terms of authenticity and tracing the provenance for their products? Maybe an example of sought after secondary market items, you know, you take maybe Nike or Rolex.
Yeah, very good question. So they are basically on the two spectrum of things, both highly sought after in the secondary market. So on the high end, you have Rolex. Rolex business model is very distributed and wholesaler heavy. So their primary channel of sales is two distributors, and they have authorized dealers that they have contract with all over the world. But the idea is, if you're not tracking a product, once it's released to the wholesaler, you have no idea what happened to your product. Even though you have guardrails around, you know, how these wholesalers are able to sell your product, but there's no way to enforce that because you won't be able to track the product. Number two is, customers that are buying Rolex are usually lifetime customers. They're not just buying one piece. the whole family comes in by different Rolexes throughout different milestones of their lives, father gifting it to their son, and then the son gifting it to his son. So there's a history around this. For them to not be able to leverage digital product passport to be able to engage with their customers is a huge loss. So that's number one. Number two is once they were sold to the wholesalers, a lot of things end up in the secondary market. Because Rolex is in such high demand, the value typically goes up. And there's no way for Rolex to be able to actually know, going back to my earlier point, the true demand for their products, how much are customers actually willing to pay for. Now all of that profit goes into the dealers, the secondary dealers. Number two is there are a lot of counterfeit products that are going to real Rolex customers that they're not able to protect the customers and protect the integrity of their product in the secondary market. So those are the two reasons for high-end products to actually have digital product passport. Number one is to understand and engage with their customers and be able to track things even to complex wholesale channels. Number two is to secondary market. For sort of a more mass market product like Nike, because of the unique model of Nike, they have a lot of limited drops. So there are a lot of, surprisingly, they're actually finding a lot of their wholesalers and dealers selling counterfeits, because those dealers might be on a smaller scale, where they're not able to get their hands on some of the limited edition products. And I would say close to half, at least 20 to 30% of Nike's customers are resellers, individual resellers that actually make a living from flipping sneakers. So these customers sometimes ended up buying counterfeit products from the source, from the primary market, because certain dealers or wholesalers are selling, they're selling a mix of counterfeit and authentic products. So right. Nike is unable, they're unable to protect their products from the primary market. And that way that makes it even harder to stop them in the secondary market. One example, it's public news, so I think I can share, is one of the most sort of well-known sneaker marketplace, which is StockX. There, the percentage of Nike, of fake Nike shoes on their marketplace is unheard of. There was one Nike sneaker dealer who reported that 38 out of 80 pairs of sneakers that he bought from StockX were fake. And StockX is known for authenticating every single pair. And that's why the sellers are, you know, the buyers are essentially, they're paying 25%, 25 to 40% transaction fee or marketplace fee to buy, just to buy a piece of StockX authenticated sneakers from their marketplace. And even that, it's, you just never know. And for that reason, Nike is actually suing StockX for selling counterfeit, knowingly or unknowingly selling counterfeit. So, which is why I'm saying that. And imagine what, so if you read our news article, what bothers everyone even more was StockX's response when it comes to customers complaining about, you know, receiving a pair of fake sneakers. Their response was, well, you can sell it back to our platform. So then someone else can, you know, take on your fault. And that's another piece when it comes to manually authenticating products by third parties, is that even for a marketplace like StockX that might be authenticating the same sneakers over and over again, because the same inventory, if your dealer goes back to the same marketplace, they still don't have the visibility into that trail of ownership or that history. So and therefore there's a lot of inconsistency when it comes to third-party manually authenticated products on these third-party resale marketplaces. Like I know I have one friend who bought a Supreme jacket from a marketplace and tried to sell it back to the marketplace a year later and was told that it was not authentic. But he's like, I bought it from you.
Wow.
So therefore, I want to say that it's really important to leverage technology and leverage authentication that was secure from by the source or at the source in order to maintain orders in the secondary market, in order to provide consistency in both product integrity and also in consumer experience. Otherwise, there is just no consistency in the perception of a product because we're all human. It's humans are going to have mistakes. They're going to have inconsistency. That is going to result into loss of revenue for brands, into legal liability for marketplaces, and into really bad customer experience.
So there's a lot on the table with authentication and transparency. And to your point, the technology is here. It's not brand new. It's how can we use this to our advantage to help create a more sustainable future for brands, for businesses, and also for the consumers? You know, this next step in Web3 and retail commerce is really exciting because having the entire transparent journey of a product is something that excites me as a jewelry brand. Thinking of sourcing stones and having all those transactions on chain is really remarkable. So how do you see the rise of these digital product passports and thinking in terms of Solaire, how do you see that helping drive more responsible consumption and production when it comes to practices in the luxury industry?
Very good question. I think, well, number one is, you know, both as female consumers, I think people tend to buy a lot yes. when it comes to consumer side. And being able to sort of dock or have a, being able to have a digital record of your all of your past purchases and be able to see exactly when and where you bought certain things and be able to archive them on, you know, your wallet per se. Right. Number one will actually drive responsible consumption on the consumer side. That will also help them to, you know, that's also making, also made by making resale a lot easier, we're also boosting circularity. Like if, you know, once a while when I go onto my wallet, I see that I've been actually buying a lot of the same things that, and I can see exactly when and how I make those purchases. And now I can, if I wanted to resell them or gift them, it makes the being able to prove the authenticity and be able to prove the value of the product is already making resale a lot easier. That also makes people a lot more comfortable to buy products on a secondary market. I personally am not a secondary shopper, only because I want to know exactly where the item comes from. So now being able to know the full history of the product, knowing the authenticity, makes me a lot more at ease when it comes to shopping in the secondary market. Yes. Number two is on the brand side, I think on the entire fashion business, the base of that is not built on sustainability. The entire model is how do we make more, sell more, and be able to, and this is the only way for them to make money. But now giving them a new revenue stream of being able to make money from the secondary market actually will ease a lot of the pressure when it comes to selling more and making more. With that, we hope that together the industry will come together as a whole to actually see secondary market not as a lost revenue piece for the brands, but also as an extension of their business. And with that, both parties, both brands and consumers can benefit from making the industry more circular, more sustainable as a whole, and also, you know, make the world a more sustainable place.
And it sounds like the right incentives are coupled together with the right behavior. And what I mean by that is the businesses are motivated by, of course, profits, but now, you know, wanting to show their customers that we are not only saying that we're sustainable, we're an ethical brand, but we can also prove this to you through the facts, through the data, which is really exciting.
I also wanted to add one more point is that, you know, there are a lot of different resale solutions on the market today. I actually made a pretty detailed sort of chart outlining the three different options. Number one is partnership with marketplaces, making them, you know, your authorized resale marketplace and directing your consumers to come and sell back on those marketplaces. Number two is probably what you are seeing more and more of for the enterprise large corporations, which is their own branded resale marketplace, meaning buyback trading programs. All of those initiatives are great. The only limitation is that you need to be of a sizable brand to be able to build your own trade-in or branded resale marketplace. It's also very capital heavy and involves a lot of logistics. And consumers generally like to resell where they can get the most where they can get the highest pricing. Obviously, convenience is one of them, but for certain products, consumers just want to get more money back. So for that reason, we provide a third solution, which is the Solaire solution, which is authenticated P2P resale using blockchain, is that we can alleviate a lot of that pressure off the brands if they wanted to participate into resale. They don't have to invest in a resale marketplace themselves and still be able to get all the data on resale without having to burden or pressure their customer into selling back only to them. Yeah,
smaller and independent brands, go back 30 seconds and re-listen to that.
Yeah, and then another piece is to, you know, meet consumers where they are. A lot of consumers, like I said earlier, wanted to sell to, you know, to their inner circles, to their own communities, if you have a small following. They wanted to sell where they can get the most money back. So we gave them a tool to resell that in an authenticated way without restricting or limiting them to only resell to a certain way. So again, and then giving also on a blockchain level, also giving brands the control of being able to influence or affect certain behaviors on resell. When I was at NFT Paris, I had a conversation with a luxury brand that he was, you know, they're very honest saying that the reason they're not in resale yet, even though there's a huge resale market of their brand, is that they don't want it to dilute their brands. You know, what's happening is happening. If it's outside of their control, they just turn the other cheek. However, if now using the digital product passport, you can actually set a parameter of pricing where say that, you know, if you bought my bag for $2,000, if it's in like new condition, you cannot sell it for, you know, less than 80% of the original retail price. That way, it's a way for them to cushion the market so then people are not selling their product for a lot cheaper. That dilutes or cannibalizes their primary sale. It's a good way to maintain product integrity, but also giving consumers a tool, or they're giving consumers freedom to sell wherever they want, but with certain influence on pricing from the brand without being too harsh and saying that this is the only way that you can sell it and we will only buy back for X amount of price. So I think this is actually a very diplomatic and polite way to sort of serve both parties when it comes to resale.
And that's how the auction models work. You have your low estimate, you have your high estimate, and the lot can't sell lower than 80%, I think, at the hammer, or the low estimate, I think it is. And that's a really good point that you bring up too, is maybe a lot of brands are concerned about the overall, what the value will look like if the price sells for maybe 50% of what it went to market with. So looking at the future of consumer goods, I pick up on you are an advocate for secondary markets, of course. What do you see in terms of markets and social commerce? What do you think the shopping experience is going to look like in the future?
Yeah, so going back to my earlier point about the rise of Web 2 of social commerce, brands, if you ask them 10 to 15 years ago, nobody will think that they will have a store now on Instagram or on TikTok, or they are be hiring influencers to sell their products. It's just not something that was even imaginable 10 years ago, but now everyone is doing it. Right. And that effect is now trickling down onto secondary market. A lot of influencers openly have sort of a my closet where they're reselling things to their consumers. So the same thing could happen for individual resellers. For example, right now the consumer behavior is if you want to buy something, you go to various marketplaces and try to search for the product that you're looking for. Or if you are just browsing through things. So typically, most consumers go to a resale marketplace if they're looking for something to buy. But that is something that is not quite effective when it comes to primary sale. Primary sale, primary marketing is we're embedding different sort of enticing you to buy things through social content. You're not particularly looking for something to buy. You're just browsing through Instagram, browsing through content, and you see repeatedly, you know, this outfit that you really liked or this pair of shoes that you really liked. On the third scroll, you might be like, I have to have these. So the same effect can now also happen on resale. Using our Solaire, the way that we design our product is number one, we allow you to embed resale listing to any social content you make. So then it's not so harsh that I'm trying to sell you something. I'm sharing a way of living. And if you like that, these items happen to be for sale and they're at a much better price because they were pre-loved. Number two is on the note of auction, we also allow them to expand their auction network, meaning that previously, if you're auctioning something, you have to host your auction on one marketplace and everybody has to go to that marketplace in order to participate in the auction. But with us, you can share the same auction content anywhere on any social platform. You can market it on as many platforms as you like. And you will not be risking the overselling or having duplicating sales because all of that traffic will be driven into your own marketplace, which actually lives in your wallet. So to that, we are not only expanding your consumer, your audience network, we're also giving you the chance to maximize your return on your auction.
This is huge because I see a lot of challenge for smaller retail brands. It's easy for a big conglomerate like LVMH with their brands to be able to create this customer experience and be able to use this technology. Now with Solaire being able to offer this, the barriers to entry are much lower now than they may have been in the past. With the benefits of the technology with Web3 and consumer products, what are some of the challenges that you see from a technology standpoint and also from a customer adoption standpoint?
Yeah, I think number one is on the technology provider side is providing ease of use. Because Web3 was not designed to be easy. It was designed to be secure and decentralized. So it's our job to adopt the technology, adapt it for real world use cases, for real commerce. Number two is making it easy to use. So then to really flatten that learning curve for consumers. On the brand side and on the consumer side, I think it comes down to education and being able to, you know, get familiar or be comfortable with the concept of Web3 and not be so afraid of it. I think in the past, because we went through a bull market where people think of NFT or Web3 as a quick way to make money, and then the market tanked. They think, "Oh, this is all evil. It's a scam." But you know, like all new technology, when it first appeared, some people that are opportunist will be trying to milk the most out of it. But as we sort of leave or ease out of that bubble, I think now the technology and the use cases are normalized. I think it's now for people to actually have an open mind, to actually learn what is the core technology behind all of that hype and what can it actually do. I actually think it's a good thing that we sort of went through a bubble. Because in the bubble, there were everybody trying to start a Web3 startup, a Web3 technology company. But now people that are actually doing it for the sake of being in a hype period, they're no longer running. It's people like us who is actually trying to use the technology for good, that are building something that has real good business value. We persisted and we stayed. And now we just sort of on a technology side, we want to invite people to keep an open mind and open heart to actually hear us and see what we are actually doing. And give us a try and be able to actually, you know, learn more about what we're doing and actually being able to participate and give us a chance. Technology is not all evil. Like if you think about, you know, it's what we're seeing today is completely normal. It's like 20 years ago, people were like, what is the internet? It's evil. It gives everyone cancer. And that's not the case. So
it's so easy to get stuck in the technical jargon, and especially let's not lose sight of the humanistic aspect of what the technology is really doing is creating a circular economy that's more people-focused. You know, you're people-focused, you're product-focused. And from the standpoint of a brand or retailer, you're able to connect with, the customer can connect with the brand in a deeper way than they couldn't have done in the past without the technology. Let's not focus too much on the technology, let's focus on the benefits. Let's focus on what it's actually doing.
I know that changes are daunting, right? A lot of people are used to working in a certain way and they don't like change. And they're afraid that their consumers might not adopt the change. But after working in retail for so long, I think that the only thing that doesn't change is that consumer behavior is always changing. So if you are not changing or adapting your business to the new consumer trends and to the new consumer behavior, then you're just going to be left behind. So I wanted to encourage your business and brands and retailers to embrace changes. It's a good thing. You don't have to change overnight, but embrace change and, you know, keep an open mind and take baby steps.
Definitely. That idea of slow productivity. You don't have to change fast. You don't have to change overnight because that's not sustainable. Yeah. So I had a question. Let's say you and I we're going shopping and we're purchasing a handbag or whatever product. How do you see that digital product passport? How do you see that being delivered in person? Do you think that's going to take place of the receipt?
Good question. I think different technology sort of providers have different solutions And there is no sort of a one size fits all answer. Like,
yes.
Solera, we take a more sort of real world commerce approach where, you know, if you are providing, you know, digital product passport, if it's an NFT, then minting mechanism has to happen. And once it's minted, in theory, there's no return because it's now permanently living in the customer's wallet. And if it's an open shelf store, if something that you can take into the fitting room, you cannot prevent people from minting the product prior to purchasing. So when we design our solution, we require what we call proof of purchase, meaning that we have to see a proof of purchase by the customer in order to deliver that NFT versus, you know, certain technology providers that are more catered to the Web3 community, what they want full decentralization. So what they use is what they call proof of possession. As long as I have a hold of the physical product, I will be able to transfer the NFT or the ownership into my wallet. So it's different mechanism for different use cases and for different consumer group. I don't think there's a right or wrong. It's just the brands has to choose what is the right solution for their customer, for their business model, and, you know, for the long-term growth of the brand.
For people who may not be extremely tech savvy, can you break down at a high level what NFTs are? They're not just, yes, one use cases are digital art, but deeper than that.
Yeah, so NFT is basically what they call non-fungible token. You can call it token, but it's really just a digital record on blockchain. The reason that it's so different is that, like, if you think of any, say, a digital file that anyone have, you can easily copy and paste, and you can easily go back and erase it. There's no way to trace or to track these things. The uniqueness of a blockchain database is that nothing is erasable. Once it's on there, you can go back and delete it, but that history of deletion will always be there. If you go back and edit it, it will always be there. The blockchain also very accurately records who created this file and who was the first recipient, second recipient, and third recipient. And every single digital record is unique. They have a unique number, a hash key to it, that no one will be able to replicate it. So that is the uniqueness of an NFT. So you're almost like assigning a unique ID to every single physical item that you buy. So that assigns a unique identity to the physical product that you own. And now as a consumer, you not only own one of 100 of this production, your item has a unique number and your item has a unique record. And because that record was issued by the brand, by the creator, it proves its authenticity. That unique ID now is free flowing because the brands can leverage this NFT, which you can think of that like an envelope that you can insert any content, any media, any engagement that they want to the owner of this physical item. And that experience can continue to evolve as the product goes through its life cycle. So that's the beauty of this technology, is that you're not holding on to a stagnant, copyable digital record that everyone else can have. It's a unique piece of digital record that's ever evolving. So that is the beauty of it.
At its core, it's ever evolving. At its core, it's pure co-creation between the brand, the initial purchaser, and then the secondary purchaser, and it goes on and on and on.
Absolutely.
The theme around this podcast show is responsible luxury and thinking about the future of sustainability, not only environmentally, but also economically and socially. From where you sit, how do you view sustainability, and what does it mean for you in regards to business and also the customers that you deal with?
Yeah, well, I think the fundamental model of the fashion industry or luxury industry is to produce new products. It's to create desire. It's to sell more items to the consumers. So that goes back to holding brands accountable when it comes to using more sustainable materials and asking them to prove that. And all of that proof will be delivered and shown to the customer in the digital product passport. Number two is using the digital product passport, how do we make more people enjoy this one single creation so then we can extend the product life and service more customers with that one creation? And also, obviously, brands have to be incentivized so then they are willing to make more durable, more desirable products that can be enjoyed by more customers. So I think in order to create a more cohesive ecosystem for everyone to work together, everybody, there has to be something, some benefits for everybody, for every single stakeholder in the value chain. Brands being able to capture more revenue from the secondary market, being able to capture more data. For consumers, being able to enjoy something that is more long-lasting, that is more of high, that is of higher quality, and be able to resell a lot easier to the next consumer. And, you know, for certain things that does have a shelf life, by the end of the life cycle, the brand is responsible to direct the consumers to responsibly recycle the product. Or in some cases, the brand will even ask the consumer to send back the product so that they can repurpose it and upcycle into a new product. So there are many, many possibilities that you can do, that you can build around a more sustainable business model, a more sustainable fashion industry. But I think technology is the tool that empowers and equips everybody, every stakeholder in the industry to be able to better do that. If you cannot track your product, how are you going to upcycle? How are you going to recycle with responsibility? If you cannot prove that your product is real, that you bought it of a certain time, how are you going to easily resell? You will be stuck with it and it will be sitting back in of your closet until one day it end up in a landfill. So I think it's brands' job to equip their product and equip their consumers with the right tools. And eventually that sort of that revenue or that piece of economy will come back and reward the brands for their good behaviors.
It sounds to me that a lot of this is going to be placed on the retailers, on the brands to, like you mentioned, educating consumers so that they know the right things to demand so it can flow upwards, because this is more of a multi-stakeholder issue. It's not just the retailers, it's also the suppliers, and when you go more upstream into any supply chain. So another question I have for you is, if you can convey one thing about the tech industry and consumer Web3, what would you convey, and how would you convey it? Think of a big billboard in the middle of Times Square. What would you want to leave as a lasting impression for the future generations to look back on what we're living through right now?
That's a very good question. I think I would say embracing changes. Yeah. I think coming back to the fundamental sort of human psychology, I think good things are coming, but if no one is willing to try it or willing to sort of, you know, take a leap of faith, it's going to be relatively difficult. And I think, you know, as a technology provider, our mission might evolve, our mission might change. Like if today I can tell you that our goal is to promote more circularity and sustainability, and then when we hit that KPI, then what's next? So if I want to leave something that's more long lasting, is that we believe that technology is here for good and technology advance changes. And we wanted to encourage consumers and brands to embrace changes. Changes are daunting, but they're good in the long term. So embrace changes.
I love that. I love that. Where can our listeners find you to connect with you and support the work that you're doing and maybe learn a little bit more about Solaire?
Yeah. So our website is mysolaire.xyz, mysolaire.xyz. Or you can find us on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn. My name is Vivian, V-I-V-I-E-M, last name Zhang, Z-H-A-N-G. We're also on Twitter. We're on X. We're on Instagram. So you can find us anywhere.
I will link that down in the show notes for you to access and connect with Vivian after the show. Vivian, thank you so much. I hope to have you back on the show again soon. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you for having me.
I hope to see you again soon now that you're back in New York, and we'll talk soon.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
See you soon.
If you enjoyed today's episode, you can catch more Responsible Luxury Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and the Laurenti New York Media page. If you have any questions you want answered or ideas to share, please reach out to us at concierge@laurentinewyork, and I link that down in the show notes below, or you can connect with me directly on LinkedIn, Instagram, and X. Let us come together to transform the future of responsible luxury. See you next week.